It's just in the past week or so that people have been allowed back into Paradise, California to see whether their homes survived the campfire last month. In many cases, the answer is no. The fire destroyed nearly 14,000 homes, and that's a huge number for a community of 27,000 people. And the housing loss came in a county and a state with an already tight supply of housing. So where are the ripple effects being felt, and what now? We have three guests with different kinds of expertise to bring to the discussion. Ryan Buras is a housing program specialist at the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me to your show.
You bet. Good to have you. Christina Curry's with us as well. She's with the California Office of Emergency Services. She's the Deputy Director of Planning, Preparedness, and Prevention. Christina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
We also have with us Steve Bade from the City of Reading. He's the Community Development Manager there. Steve, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
You bet. Good to have you all here. We're hoping to get Colin Milan as well, a realtor from Ashland, to talk about effects over the state line. Don't have any sign of him yet. Let me start with Christina Curry from the California Office of Emergency Services. I know you're planning and prevention, but I would like to talk a little aftermath first and just talk about the process, because there was a release actually out yesterday from your office about California launching an unprecedented wildfire cleanup effort. So what are the things that have to happen before people can get back to their homes, and we can even begin to talk about things like rebuilding?
Well, that the debris operation is, as you mentioned, is really kind of where we are right now. Of course, Cal OES has been involved since the beginning of the event in November, with support to the response operations, and sort of that kind of beginning part of housing is obviously having people sheltered safely as an immediate measure, and then transitioning into something more interim, and then ultimately the rebuild. But yes, really what we're mobilizing now, as we've had in past events, is to assist with the debris removal operation and just really the unprecedented level of cleanup. Last year was a big event for California, and then with the North Bay fires and the cleanup, this one is orders of magnitude larger, so we're standing up that operation now.
I guess we don't tend to think about the things in our closets and basements and garages as being toxic, but when you burn them all, I mean, a lot of things can happen with the stuff we keep in our houses, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. The fire disasters unfortunately create, you know, very, very complicated debris operation because of exactly what you mentioned. When you have something that burns, you know, to the ground with everything that's in it, and things that, yeah, you may not think about just on a day-to-day basis become hazardous, and require a complex operation to facilitate a cleanup to return that to a safe condition.
And is there a usual, what are the numbers right now that we're looking at for getting, people were allowed back into Paradise recently, but there seems like there's probably months of cleanup left still.
Yeah, it will be done in phases, as you may have heard with other information that's been out about this, with the household hazardous waste, really kind of removing those toxic materials as a first stage for sort of the immediate, and that's underway now, and then to be followed by the full cleanup. So yes, this is going to be a long road ahead.
Let's turn to Ryan Buras, the housing program specialist at FEMA. And do you know where most of the people who fled the campfire ended up staying?
Yes. Well, they're in several counties outside, including Butte County. And we even have several households outside of the state still. We are here in the Sacramento office. We have people in Sacramento. We have people in Yolo County. We have people in Mendocino. So there's several counties that's housing several of the campfire survivors.
And then if you can pull the parts apart for us a bit to give us a gander at what things do go on in the housing program after a fire like this, what is FEMA prepared to do? What is it able to do? And what is left to other agencies as far as housing is concerned?
Sure. Well, we always start with, you know, everybody sees housing in FEMA and they always think of the travel trailers or the manufactured homes, right? And that's really one of the last things that we do, because what we want to do first is provide owners and renters some rental assistance first, where they can find their own rental unit. And the big thing this year is when we provide rental assistance, it doesn't go against their max grant that they can get with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which last year was not the case. We also have transitional sheltering, so we can house people in the hotels that are participating. We do have over 100 participating in that program currently now. We do provide you know, depending on your insurance, if you have insurance or not, as you do rebuild and you get housing, we do provide a grant to help you rebuild. And then lastly, of course, in an incident like this where there was so much damage, so much destruction, the vacancies rate were low right prior to the event, we turned on our direct housing program, and that affords us to bring in gravel trailers and manufactured houses and provide that to the camp survivor for up to 18 months.
And how many of those can you provide? Is there an upper limit to what you can provide in any area, or is it just as many applicants as you get?
The good news is there is no max. So we are anticipating several hundred, even up to a couple of thousand people that will be participating in this program, which I will say is traditionally large. This is a larger event. And, you know, even though a lot of people had insurance, once again, there's really nowhere to use that insurance and the assisted living expense that they get. So we are ready to bring in as many units as possible and as more importantly, as is needed.
Steve Bate, I want to turn to you at the City of Reading. I know that existing housing is not necessarily where you focus, but I just wonder if you're aware of the pressures on housing stock in Shasta County from people who've been burned out in neighboring Butte County.
Yes, we've had some, you know, interest of people relocating to the Reading area, specifically in our office with our Housing Choice Voucher Program, which is the rental assistance program. We've had a few applicants that have are looking to try and relocate to Reading to get some permanent housing solutions.
Okay, so definitely some contact so far. We have much more to talk about what happens with housing and the ripple effects on neighboring communities all the way up to the state line and beyond. From the Camp Fire, and of course there was the Car Fire before that and the Klamathon Fire before that, so it's been a summer of many big fires in the region. Ryan Burris is the Housing Program Specialist at FEMA, Christina Curry with Cal OES, Steve Bade with the City of Reading. We'll come back and talk with them, and if you'd like to join us, we'll take your phone calls and emails as well. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Jefferson Exchange to talk more about post-fire housing in a minute 20. On the Jefferson Exchange, on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about housing and how to provide it for people after the big fires, particularly in California, because that's where so many people were displaced. The Camp Fire in Paradise alone burned down almost 14,000 homes, in addition to causing the deaths of 85 people. So we have several guests with us to get a handle on what happens now, not just in that area, but also in the areas further around. Think of them as much larger concentric circles to and over the state line. Our guests include Ryan Burris, who's a housing program specialist at FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Christina Curry is with the California Office of Emergency Services, where she's Deputy Director of Planning, Preparedness, and Prevention. Steve Bade is with the City of Reading. He's the Community Development Manager. And Colin Milan just joined us here in the studio. He's a realtor in Ashland, the regional vice president of the National Association of Realtors, and a past president of the Oregon Association of Realtors. Colin, thank you for joining the conversation here.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey. Pleasure to be here.
I want to come back to Steve Bade just a bit in the City of Reading, because we heard plenty about the lack of vacant housing in Butte County, and now, of course, there's 10% less of it. And so give us a sense of what the situation was like in Reading before this summer's fires.
Well, before the summer's fire, we already had a very tight market. We had April 2018 survey revealed that our overall vacancy rate for multifamily housing was less than 1%. And then in addition to that, even our income-restricted complexes were less than 1%. And that was prior to the Car Fire in July.
Okay, so a tight market for sure. And then were there many approvals for housing in the works before the fire, for example? I'm just trying to get an idea what the pipeline for construction was even before we had this summer's round of fires.
Yeah, there's I don't have the specific number for the single family. I know that we in the housing division, we have a number of large-scale projects that we have been working on and have some under construction at this moment, especially our K2 downtown Market Street development, where we're building 82 multifamily units in our downtown. And then we also have another 20-unit tax credit project that is looking to break ground in the next 3 or 4 months. And we're currently also working with, we were recently awarded some additional affordable housing sustainable community funds from the state to construct another 79 units in downtown. And so we're working on those efforts right now. So we have a good movement with the multifamily unit kind of creation. And so we're also using some of our federal funds to possibly develop our City of Reading vacant properties that we have available. So we're trying to make every effort to create housing units in the City of Reading.
And so I was going to ask about that, the land situation. Is there enough vacant land to allow lots of home building in the City of Reading?
Yes, I would say that there is. We have some good multifamily properties that are vacant, and that's where we're trying to make those you know, financial deals to make those pencil and work. And that's where, you know, multifamily over the last few years has been a slow process because the financial end of it didn't really work. And now that we're able to get some of the state and federal monies available to develop those, we're able to fill that gap and get some units constructed on the multifamily side.
When you say a financial end didn't work, did it not pencil out because of recessionary pressures or just because of the basic finances of multifamily housing?
It was a combination of the cost of new construction and the rents that were being generated by those units. They just weren't matching. And so we're getting a little closer to where, you know, you can almost make a market rate type of project work, but we're not quite there yet. So really most of the multifamily that's going is really has some sort of federal or state or local grant funding or, you know, below market interest rate loans to make those pencil out.
Something to get more housing available for people who are in a tougher position financially.
Correct.
All right. Let me turn to Colin Milan now, who's the Ashland Realtor and the Regional Vice President for the National Association of Realtors, and just ask in general terms if you've noticed much of an effect on people seeking out Oregon or Southern Oregon properties because of them leaving behind California and fire-prone areas.
You know, we've had some dialogue with some members of the public who are looking and exploring what their options are. I think in terms of folks, which I would touch the most in terms of the people that come in front of me are looking at home ownership decisions as opposed to renting decisions. And I think relative to those decisions, they take longer because they're dealing with their insurance companies right now. Is that insurance company going to require and most likely will that they rebuild on site? So as they move through the months and potentially years before they get out the other side of that, it's going to take some time before they're in a position to make a decision on where they want to go. Some of them may have the option, depending on the policies that they have, where they can choose to rent in the meantime and may utilize that time frame to live in some of these areas that are potentially a place for them to look at. So we've had some discussions, but there's a lot of confusion out there amongst the folks that are affected by that fire in terms of what their options are, and a lot of that's going to depend on where their insurance coverage lands.
Let's bring that back to you, Ryan Buras at FEMA, the Housing Program Specialist. I mean, do residents have to file insurance claims before they seek FEMA assistance?
So yes and no. First, we encourage everybody to register for FEMA. So that's what's important. You know, even if you have insurance, you know, you still could be eligible for programs, including SBA assistance on the back end. But one thing we do is, and we're moving a little, we're moving extremely quick here in a little different avenue. When you register FEMA, if you have insurance, you're just required to submit some insurance documents. Now, keep in mind, a lot of those documents might have been in the home that was burned, so getting those documents would be a challenge. And then based off your documentation, then you would proceed through the FEMA program. But one thing we do in here to speed this up is we overlaid those. We had 8,100 applications come in that said they had insurance. We were in, and we're still awaiting their documentation. But what we're doing here is taking a GIS visual to know, you know, this person's home was clearly destroyed. So instead of waiting for that documentation to do the inspection, we're moving forward with calling those residences now and seeing what sort of housing assistance that they will need.
So technology is allowing you to move more quickly, you're saying?
Absolutely. It's, you know, we tried this last year. I was here last year in the 2017 fires. I would say this year it's working a lot better. But yes, you know, having that visual before and after, you can clearly see, particularly in the fire event, right, what the damage was. flooding event's a little different because you can't see inside the home. But a fire event, you can clearly see the damage, and we can react much quicker.
You were talking about the missing documents, and of course, if you're trying to dig out your insurance policy and it burned up in your home, you can't do that. I mean, are you making any recommendations at FEMA about where to store documents in the cloud or online or otherwise in a place that's accessible to you quickly, even without physical paper?
The cloud is always a good place to go, but you know, keep in mind, I'm from originally from a small town in Louisiana, and I still have family members that do not get on the internet, and they want to have everything in hand. So with that said, the cloud's always a great place to have it, or even taking some pictures and put it on your phone is also a good place. But in the meantime, for those people that are still struggling to find that or haven't touched their insurance companies yet, you know, they can go to the disaster recovery centers. There are a lot of insurance agents there. We actually provide free legal services to help people with this process. So there's a lot of services now, but the cloud taking pictures is always ideal.
Ryan, when we were talking to Colin about owners versus renters, I wonder if you know at FEMA what the split is of people in the campfire in particular who lost houses, whether those are primarily owners or some renters in there too, or what the mix was.
It's a pretty good mix. I know on the rental assistance side, so people that we have provided rental assistance to, it's roughly 2/3 renters and 1/3 owners. And I say that in caution just because, as I mentioned before, we still have 8,100 homeowners that are we're just waiting some insurance. So those numbers will flip on. And for people that have said, yes, Ryan, we definitely need help to find a place to stay. We can't find anything using our rental assistance. So those people that are qualified for those mobile homes and travel trailers, it's about 50% renters and 50% owners.
Now, do the mobile homes and the travel trailers get placed on the property the people own, or do they end up in some other place, or where do those go?
So the program really is designed, particularly on the recreational vehicle side, it's designed to be put in your front yard while you make your repairs to your home, which works ideally like in a flood event, right? So you can just muck out your house and then get it done. In a fire event, as Tina was talking and as everyone's aware, there's a big debris mission. So we can't place a unit that's not safe. And we also have to place a unit that has working utilities. So right now, what we're looking at in the short term is we're working closely with state and private owners that have commercial parks that has open spots that we can put units in. And we're also looking at potentially building some, we call it group sites, but for you and your listeners, it's more like a subdivision, which is close to a paradise that we can put several hundred units in. And ideally, people that get these units, particularly the recreational vehicles, if we place them, a little outside of paradise, but their home in 6 months gets the debris is gone, the utilities are working, then we can move that family back to their property while they rebuild. That's a long way of saying we have no way of doing it. We just do everything we can to ensure that the family has as much as they need, during this long road to recovery.
Housing after fire and on down the road to recovery that Ryan Burris talks about here on the Jefferson Exchange. Ryan is a housing program specialist of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. Christina Curry, the Tina he mentioned, is the California Office of Emergency Services Deputy Director of Planning, Preparedness, and Prevention. We also have with us Steve Bade from the City of Reading. He's the Community Development Manager. And here in the studio, Colin Milan, an Ashland Realtor and Regional Vice President of the National Association of Realtors. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Questions, comments, ideas about things that people should be doing when they consider housing after fire and off into the future, in a future that does appear to include more fires over time, as we've seen in the last several years. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions, comments, thoughts, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Christina, give us a sense of scale here, if you would, because it just seems like this year in particular has been bad. But then there were also bad fires in the wine country, North Bay, last year, 2017. And so, I mean, is the scale just increasing by double digits every year?
Well, it seems to be the case lately, as you said, and really looking back at even 2017, starting with a widespread flood event throughout California, on the heels of a drought than having, you know, kind of these repetitive, very large-scale fire seasons. It's definitely changing in the sense that disasters are increasing in their frequency and magnitude. And, of course, as we increase in size as a state, the impact of those disasters will be commensurate. So it has been a challenging year for Californians. There's no doubt about it. California is also, used to being prepared for disasters because a lot, it's known that a lot of things can happen here. Fires definitely have been what has, been the most recent and definitely at a magnitude. I mean, this last year was records were broken on the scale of the fires, and then again in November, those were broken yet again. So definitely a trend that these are increasing in magnitude and frequency.
Just at Cal OES, have you had to increase staff over the last couple of years, I wonder?
Well, one thing about Cal OES is we have, my position, for example, I work in planning preparedness, but I'm trained to help in other areas such as response and recovery. So we definitely, move our resources around to fit the need that's in front of us. We also have the ability to expand in the short term to get the things that we need to help the communities when they need it. So we have the ability to ebb and flow. We have had to increase lately to match the need that has been presented to us. We also work very closely across state government. So Cal OES is in a unique position to leverage the expertise and the help of all of the different state agencies that need to heed the call to assist.
Colin Milan, I want to turn to you as the realtor in the group and involved with selling people homes. I mean, we talked about some interest expressed, but I wonder if on the other hand you had some issues this summer, or if other realtors would have reported to you issues with people who wanted to get out of Southern Oregon, for example, because of the amount of smoke that lingered in the region for months from fires.
Yeah, that one for sure. We saw a lot of people that rejuvenated interest in living on the coast, for example, a cooler climate, less propensity. Of course, we know that that's not totally exempt. We had fires there last year, but we had a lot of people that were actively looking for homes in July that kind of went away, August and September, looking to return and maybe look when the smoke had gone away, but have made other decisions. This is something that we're dealing with now, where a lot of times folks from California and from other states would look to Oregon as a place to come and retire, that are reevaluating the entire scenario with regards to what quality of life is going to look like when you give consideration for things like a smoky atmosphere year after year after year from July going forward. It's a concern for people. So we've seen an impact in the region. We've seen the consumer be better educated as to what it is that they're looking for from a particular region and how exposed they may be. They're also taking into consideration things like their health exposure. A lot of times we have people that look for single level homes in Ashland, for example, because they don't want to be dealing with stairs as they age and potentially causing an injury. They're also now throwing into air quality in parts of the summer. Are they going to have to spend 2-3 months indoors as their system filtrates the smoke from the air for quality? So we're certainly seeing that. We're not seeing a dramatic decrease in the number of buyers coming to the area. I think we're just seeing an increased level in those conversations and the types of conversations, and in some cases the preparedness of the area if an event like that was to come here.
So the traffic's about the same, but the questions are a little different?
It's a little difficult to tell where the traffic's going to go quite this year. I think anecdotally, a lot of realtors have shared they had buyers that left the market and didn't come back. We saw a slowdown in the market around that same time. I can tell you that slowdown was similar across the country. So whether it's related here or not, we can certainly attribute some anecdotal. I think you'll see a lot more going forward next year. I think next spring, next summer will be a big telltale, and then going forward from there.
Well, then I was going to ask you, in your capacity, since you have some information about national trends being attached to the National Association of Realtors, if there is some level of West Coast departure generally, if people are talking about just completely other parts of the country.
Again, we haven't really seen that. A lot of times the danger in speaking anecdotally is it's one person's unique perspective and how many clients they've spoken to, and then they paint a broader picture, which may not be accurate. Our data doesn't necessarily support that quite just yet. We look at examples. People say, oh, there's an earthquake in San Francisco in 1989, we never really saw a massive influx to any of the surrounding states or areas where there isn't maybe as much propensity to have that. So maybe as humans, we're conditioned to initially have a reaction, but then over time, gradually get a comfort level back, staying where we were at. I'm not quite sure what the answer is there, but we're not seeing that. What we are seeing at the national level, however, is a bigger increase in conversation around how we as a nation prepare. So we're moving away from a conversation, we're very firmly in this conversation about national flood insurance, and that affects the entire country, to maybe perhaps more something closely and akin to national disaster insurance, so that these more annual events like fire can be included in that.
So there have been certainly some discussions already, it sounds like, Christina Curry at Cal OES, about the future. And I mean, have they gotten really detailed on things like what Ken Pimlott at Cal Fire was talking about yesterday? He's going to retire at the end of this week, and he's talking about maybe we should stop building houses out near where fires happen.
Well, like I said before, you know, California is fortunately or unfortunately, no stranger to disasters. So we do have a pretty rigorous program in place to prepare and train first responders, and you know, communities have what we call hazard mitigation plans in place to anticipate not only these happening, but also measures to commitments to reduce those risks. But we're certainly seeing, you know, I think what has been coined as a new normal, where the magnitude and intensity of these events, you know, fire and otherwise, are just beyond what we'd seen before. So every disaster presents a ton of lessons to learn. We're just going to have to make those lessons, put those in place very quickly, knowing that there isn't going to be a lot of time in between events, so that we can anticipate better and continue to improve our ability to keep communities safe. And that's collectively, it's across the board, local government, we support all the time, including during disasters, to capture lessons learned and invest in opportunities to make things safer for the future. But definitely we are planning for disasters of a greater magnitude than we did, before.
Back in the exchange in 1 minute. Final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about housing after fire. California has known a lot of fire this year. Oregon has known some as well. But the great destruction in homes has come in California, and the Camp Fire alone, nearly 14,000 homes burned down in Paradise, which is a community of 27,000 people. So that's a huge chunk of the housing stock just gone in smoke, literally. We have some guests talking about what happens immediately afterward and further off into the future, and then ripple effects all the way up to and over the state line. Ryan Buras is the housing program specialist at FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Christina Curry is with Cal OES, the deputy director of planning, preparedness, and prevention. Cal OES, of course, the governor's office of emergency services. Steve Bate is with the city of Reading, where he's the community development manager, and Colin Milan is in the studio with me. He is an Ashland realtor, regional vice president of the National Association of Realtors, and past president of the Oregon Association of Realtors. I want to come back and talk a little bit more about the city of Reading, because I haven't talked very much about the car fire impacts there. Obviously, a lot of homes, several hundred homes lost in the city. Steve, what can you tell us about the progress of people getting permits and beginning construction there?
Well, we have a number of residents that are rebuilding and looking to stay in the community to rebuild their property. And so that's been one of the focuses of the city, is to assist individual property owners with that rebuild process. And I know that they have already started to release the first rounds of building permits, and we have a number of building permits coming in. I don't have that exact number. The building division would have some of those, you know, real statistics, but I know that they're, you know, they've hired retired plan checkers back to help facilitate that process, so that it's a nice, clean, and quick process, so that people can begin to rebuild.
Even with the nice, clean process you just described, though, I mean, there's still, you know, there's certain levels of boxes that have to be checked, right? You can't just, you know, fast track it to a place where it you're missing some critical reviews, right?
Correct. Yeah, they still need to, you know, have their plans drawn to the building code standard and go through the plan check process. But, you know, the part that we can help out is facilitating that once it gets in, and making it an efficient process for the approval.
Has the city council or the administrator's office done anything about providing you any more people to help move things along a little faster through the office?
Yes, they have. They've brought back a few of our some past plan checkers and engineers to help facilitate with the plan check review.
Mm-hmm. And as far as getting housing built for the future, because you know it was already, as you mentioned, a less than 1% vacancy rate, particularly among rentals in the city of Reading. What can be done, if anything, to go ahead and try to fast track applications that come in the future? Is it just between state and local law? You just have a lot of stuff you have to take care of.
Well, there's a lot of steps to get it done, and at the state level and this and the city's local level. But the part that we can, you know, as a city, is to help facilitate developers when they have these, you know, these projects, when they actually want to submit their plans, you know, and that's really helping, you know, get them through the plan check process and making sure that they're submitting, you know, complete applications, and so that we can get those units under construction. And we're also helping facilitate by looking at the various local affordable housing funds that may be out there, or other funding opportunities to help facilitate some of those projects and create units in our community.
Ryan Burris at FEMA, is there? I know that that FEMA works with several other agencies on the disaster response end. I just wonder if FEMA also has ties into programs like what Steve was just talking about, where you are able to direct people toward grants and loan programs that'll help get more affordable housing built as well.
Yeah, we have a program that's, you know, what we consider the long term recovery, we have a team that's dedicated to that. The lead of that actually arrives here tomorrow. And there's going to be a lot of, you know, in the federal side, whether it's HUD, USDA, SBA, FEMA, we'll work closely with the state agencies. And of course, you know, we'll be doing everything that the locals want to execute. But there's going to be a lot of opportunities here. There's going to be a lot of money coming in to the County of Butte. And we'll be there to assist, particularly on the technical assistance side, to assist them to ensure that, you know, they're maximize every program that's out there. They are aware of every, a pot of money, but more importantly, the programs, particularly HUD, you know, they do have some options that we can build some affordable housing, and that is their mission. So we'll be pulling that together here quickly, and we'll be working closely with the state and local governments to move this forward.
Ryan, is your work focused just on Butte County? I guess I'm curious to know if you have roads into the other California areas that have lost some housing to fires lately and what might be up there.
So my particular role up here right now is my counterpart, Tina. We do also oversee, you know, Ventura, and we also oversee the LA fires down south and Butte. I'm not involved, I'm not involved in the Redding area, but we do have a team that's here that's dedicated to that. I was here last year for 6 months working the Wine Country fires with Tina in the state. So I feel like I now live in California, and I have a vested interest in helping everyone out.
So let's talk about all the crews that are going to be required to build these new homes. Steve Bade, I mean, what do you know about construction crews and the ability of contractors to latch onto them and deploy all the people who are needed to do all this building and rebuilding?
Well, I know that our construction industry is probably at its peak level of being busy, and that a lot of the contractors are, you know, trying to respond to the work that's out there between the single family developments that are underway and the multifamily and the commercial. I mean, we have a very robust construction period right now, and yes, I think people just have to be patient and really find good general contractors that are licensed and you know, can get them into their schedule.
Colin Milan, I wonder if you see a cross-state line sort of effect there. I mean, if there's a lot of building going on in California, are there fewer crews in Southern Oregon? Do they move around like that? Or what sorts of things do you see there, if anything?
You know, not typically. I'm listening to the conversation right now, and I'm actually thinking about some builders that I work with and wondering if that's indeed a conversation we should have in terms of, we've seen a slowdown here in our market. And so are builders looking at a shift to where they might have the resources to reapply that to, in fairness, Reading's not that far away, but it would take, obviously, a change in contractor's license to that of a California versus an Oregon, but it's certainly not something I think that's been an active conversation. There's been enough business here in front of them over the last 5, 6, 7 years as we've come out of the last decline in the housing economy that it hasn't been on their radar. But as the market starts to shift and they start to plan going forward, it may well be a conversation that neighboring states look at opportunity, and I mean that in the best possible sense, to create the relief that's needed in these markets. I mean, the numbers we're talking about are massive. If somebody said we need to replace 14,000 homes in Ashland, I don't know what we would do. I mean, it's seriously, it's a we're building you know 15 to 25 units a year in Ashland. So where would we come with that? So you know, I don't know that the resources are there from Oregon to push that direction, but I think it's certainly going to be a conversation some of the builders and contractors in the area will have.
You talked about a slowdown in the Southern Oregon market already, though. And what do you attribute that to?
You know, I think that's cyclical. Again, I've had the opportunity to travel across the country and get familiar with different markets. And so when we had a lot of conversations here about the smoke, I was back in D.C., I was in Chicago, I was in Nashville, I was in many other areas. And their slowdown has been somewhat similar. And it's a 14 to 16 weeks ago we can attribute it to. It's not dramatic. It's not anything like 05, 06, but we're noticing it. And it's potentially consumer confidence related. We're looking at, and certainly in the stock market, there's many factors you could attribute it to. We've had a very robust recovery and growth, and so this is more of a normalizing phase. And so when you've been moving at 120 miles an hour for the last 5 years, and you slow down to 80, it feels like everything just stopped, but it hasn't. So I think that's really all we're talking about.
Well, does the 120 mile an hour market produce high prices though? Is that part of what might lead to a slowdown after a while? Is people just go, okay, now you've reached my limit?
Yeah. I think that's absolutely a part of it. I think buyers kind of, to a degree, put their hands in the air and said, well, we won't tolerate this much longer. And, you know, it's an equalization phase. So I think you're going to see the first part of that is a normalizing of prices. You won't see the rapid acceleration in pricing. And we've seen that over the last year or two, believe it or not, statistically demonstrated that we haven't surged that much in prices in Southern Oregon. So the next possible step would be getting more realistic on pricing. So I wouldn't expect anything like what we had 05, 06, 07, or anything close to that. But it might feel like that initially. As we get down from, well, I'm going to put it up at 5 or 10% more than last year just because the market's there. It won't be there. So we'll see what happens in the spring.
Steve Bade, City of Reading Community Development Manager. What can you tell us about the prices of homes for purchase in Reading and what effect, if any, having fewer homes because of fire has done to that?
You know, what I've seen in the market is, I mean, there's been a slight increase, but nothing of real significance that I've noticed. I know that the number of houses for sale is down a bit also compared to, you know, most recent, you know, real estate cycles. But, you know, I don't think there's been a significant increase in pricing.
Okay. So let's come back to some of the future things that we can talk about here, that where this all leads us down the road. And Christina Curry, I want to come to you at Cal OES. We are talking planning, preparedness, and prevention. And we touched on this already because Ken Pimlott, again, the Cal Fire boss retiring this week, talked about building in vulnerable areas. The mayor of Paradise has said that she wants to rebuild. We will rebuild in Paradise. Is that a decision solely up to the people who own property there, to the city government, to some combination of local and state governments? I mean, is that a decision that somebody's prepared to make, or is it just that as people choose with their own property to rebuild, they get to rebuild?
Well, certainly the local government, just, you know, just like all aspects of a disaster and a disaster response and recovery, is in the lead to drive the decisions that we then come in and support as state and federal government. I think Ryan touched on this a little bit. One of the opportunities, if you will, that comes about when there is a disaster is the opportunity to reduce risk and have real investment towards that. So there are financial programs that come through the state from FEMA in the form of what we call hazard mitigation. So, you know, so it's part of that, you know, kind of recovery and support for recovery as we'll be talking to the communities about, first of all, implementing their plans for risk reduction that they have in place before disasters, so they thought through how they will mitigate risk in the future, and then actually have opportunities to really invest in those plans because the funds then become available. So it's a little bit, you know, there's a lot ahead, but these programs we know of, and we are going to be talking to the communities about them, and you know, start to, you know, as we're grappling with what's right in front of us and supporting the immediate needs, also start looking ahead to the future and having the discussions about what those risk reduction measures are going to look like as part of the rebuild, so that it is so that Paradise is rebuilt safely.
Ryan Burris at FEMA, I mean, there are situations where the federal government has said, you know what, it's better if you just move the community. We had a whole high school moved in a coastal community in Oregon to get it out of a tsunami zone. What kinds, I mean, so it's generally about water. We've talked about this so far, but are there programs where the federal government says, you know, this is a real fire-prone area. We'll give you extra money to go over there away from it.
Yes, there's programs like that. I'm very familiar with those. And you're right. Typically, it is, you know, around the coast side. You know, being raised in, you know, New Orleans, Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, everyone said that we should not rebuild. But the local county and the local parish in that case said, no, we will. So I think what Tina just said is you know, all recovery efforts really start best when they're locally executed. So I'll let those decisions be presented by Paradise and Butte County and let them talk about that. And if that's something they can, they would like to consider, obviously we'll listen to that. But we are not going to go in there and say, you know, you should not rebuild this city. We'll be supporting what Paradise City wants, and we'll assist the state any way that we can.
Steve Bade, as you rebuild the areas that burned in the car fire in Redding, are there any additional restrictions on materials or location or configuration of house or anything like that?
No, there's been no additional. I mean, they have the setbacks and the zoning and those types of rules, but nothing additional.
All right, so a long road ahead of us. Ryan Burris, as you look at, you mentioned having been in flood situations before. I mean, how long, from your estimation, does it take things to be quote-unquote sort of normal again in a town that's had a huge disaster like what Paradise had?
Oh, that's a tough question. And just because I personally, you know, went through this just in a different environment. So I think it's started. I think it's going to be phases. I think the first, and I hate to use that word, but you know, the first phase is just, you know, that person just has a new place to stay, right? Whether that's a manufactured home or a rental assistance, and adjusting to that. And I think that's the first sign of hope. As far as the recovery side, it all ties to, you know, the city and their plan and how they want to move forward. I can say, just to give an example, you know, last year in Sonoma, there was a particular town, Coffee Park, I believe was the name. They're 75% rebuilt already, which is extremely quick. Where I grew up, it took 10 years to get the first hospital back. So it really depends on how fast that city wants to work. And I can say the mayor of Paradise has made it clear she wants to be back in a couple of years. So that's a very promising sign.
All right. Ryan Burris at FEMA, Christina Curry at Cal OES, Steve Bade at the City of Reading, and Realtor Colin Milan. Thank you all for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.